Please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voices on your public airwaves. That's kpfk.org. Please sign up now. And thanks.
Hi, this is Lisa Gay Hamilton, and you're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
This is Feminist Magazine, a weekly radical radio show and podcast produced by a diverse collective of feminists. And every week, we bring you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. Because we want you to know a little bit more about Feminist Magazine, who we are and how we do it, and why you'll want to support feminist radio on the air on KPFK every week. And I'm Lynn Harris-Ballin, your host today, and this is what feminism can sound like. Today we're talking to the owners, founders, and curators of Get Lit Books and Things. It's a Black woman-owned bookstore curating books and things for queers, women, POC, and all kinds of bibliophiles. And we're talking to Danielle Myers-Porter and Ruthie Myers-Porter. Welcome both to Feminist Magazine.
Hi, thank you for having us.
It's beautiful to see you both and hear you both today. And we're in the season right now, right, where everybody is thinking about gifting. And I don't know, I'm a book person, so I'm always on the what is the perfect gift for everybody? It's a book. So I've been sitting with, like, you know, my nieces, my friends, my other nibblings, and thinking, what would this one like? What would that one like? You know, the music lover, the sci-fi kid. And who better to ask than, you know, two book curators who I happen to know. And I would love to hear from you both and let our listeners know, like, what are you loving? What are your, you know, your bookstore friends and customers loving? What are you recommending to people? So we're just going to give folks a bunch of good ideas for gifting.
Yay, I love that.
Love that. Yes.
Let's start with your own personal favorites. If somebody came in and said, I just need a gift, I don't really know, what are you loving most of all in your bookstore that you're really excited about right now? Danielle, why don't you start?
So I tell people about my favorite book of all time, all the time.
Yeah.
And that book is Like Water for Chocolate. It's not new, but it is, I think that that book showed me what reading could be, like that imagination, creating this entire world, magical realism. I think that I had read a lot and I liked to read as a kid, but I think that that opened my eyes to such a new world of reading and then being able to dive into another culture and learn about it. That is my favorite book of all time. So I often recommend that to people who love a little bit of magic and love a family story. And it's got, you know, lead women characters and it takes place in Mexico. It's just beautiful. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. So anytime I have the chance to recommend it, either in English or in Spanish, I recommend it because I love it.
I mean, it's been years since I read it, and now you're reminding me, and I'm like, wait, do I still have a copy? So that's a great one. Ruthie, how about you?
I really can't say that I have a favorite or favorite books, but I do have books that stick with me because how they make me feel. But one that made me feel very deeply most recently was Hello Beautiful. I have eight sisters, and the story is about four sisters. And I'm like, I could see my sisters in each one of them. And I just felt it so deeply. I was bawling every other chapter. I was stopping Danielle. So I like books based on how I feel because I read so many. I will consume anything. It is one area where my brand of ADHD is a superpower.
You know, you got to look, find your superpowers. And that's definitely one. And tell us, who's the author of that one? I haven't heard of that.
It's Anne, her last name, I'm butchering it, Napolitano.
and Napolitano. What we'll do is grab some of these names at the end, and we'll put a little list on our Facebook and on our website so that if folks want to shop afterwards, they know where to go. So, Danielle, I know that you guys have a lot of books that are by Black women authors, a lot of also sci-fi and fantasy, because you're both fans, I think. In terms of bringing more Black women authors up, who would you recommend right now as beautiful gifts for folks?
Oh, I recommend anything by Nnedi Okorafor. She is a wonderful speculative fiction writer, and she has several books. She has short stories, some novellas, and a series. I think she's very well known for, I think Ruthie's currently reading the Akata Witch series.
Oh, yeah, and the lead character is a young albino woman, and I love that that's a lead character type that we don't see centered in a lot of stories.
Sure.
And I love that. A lot of the books that I read are where the characters I think need to be centered are the characters that I see every day that just aren't, which is kind of what we carry through our store. I mean, if you're othered in another store, you're centered in our store.
I love that. It's like you walk in and you don't see yourself, and you want to make that space.
Yeah, we are unapologetically us. When you come in, you see us. You see women, you see POC, you see LGBTQ in all ages. It's just beautiful.
And in terms of like different ages or those difficult to buy for people, you're like, I don't know what they would like to read. Like teens and, you know, those relatives in your family perhaps, or in your family of choice, who you want to get something special for, what are you recommending to folks if they walk in and ask for suggestions around that?
I am very much into rom-coms. Every holiday season, I very much love watching all the Christmas shows and rewatching them and things like that. I'm not even going to lie, I cried at several already. But there's a very cute coming-of-age story called Friday I'm in Love by Cameron Garrett. Mm. It's YA, but it skews on the younger end of YA, so it's perfect for like your sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth grades. And then also, bringing it back to sisters, Big Sister, Little Sister by Lei Wen Pham. Oh, it is so cute. And as a little sister, I related so much to the little sister in that book. And that's a board book for littles.
Oh, cool. Okay. So what kind of age would that be?
3-4.
Sounds perfect. How about you, Danielle?
I would recommend The Teller of Small Fortunes by Julie Leung. It's a beautiful story about a woman who is in a foreign land, and she's telling fortunes kind of as she's crossing this big country. And through her experiences as she travels, she picks up a group of people. It is a Dungeons and Dragons type story in that it takes those type of characters, but it does such a fabulous job of addressing what it's like to be a woman, what your experience might be of being queer, and of, you know, what racism might look like in a way that's not so traumatizing for people. You know, so the main character is, they call her Shin, which is akin to being Asian. And she's in this land, and so she looks visibly different than everybody, so they can identify her quickly. And the people that she picks up are open-minded, and they respect her and grow to love her. But when they are traveling with her, they get to see racism firsthand. Mm. And they get to see what it's like for others, you know, as they join these missions and try to, you know, to overcome these things. And I think it's a beautiful, beautiful story without being overtly preachy. Mm-hmm. I think that for a YA book, it's a very good introduction to that, especially if you like fantasy, or if you like, you know, it's got trolls in it and bards and, you know, like some magic and everything.
Yeah.
But it's very, very approachable, very well written, and incredibly sweet. So I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, I'm also a fantasy, speculative fiction kind of give me a little magic in my books kind of reader. And that's something really joyful, the journey, but also, mm-hmm. you know, at this time of year, it's like we're hopefully a little more relaxed. We've got some time mm-hmm. to go on those journeys. And YA books, I think, are a lot of our quote-unquote guilty pleasures.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely.
I definitely want to touch on the guilty pleasure. What I love about another author, Alice Oseman, she was the YA author I needed at my young, queerly confused age, because she talks about a lot of different, again, characters that are not, you know, front and center in a greater media. And she's actually now on Netflix with her Heartstopper series.
Oh, right.
But I read her Radio Silent, and she has asexual, aromantic characters, and she delves into that. And it's really wonderful to see, again, topics that aren't usually centered. And for me, she was the YA author that I needed at that age when I was figuring out myself.
That's a really good question. Like, what does somebody need? What do you gift them, and you're like, this might stretch you a little bit. Like, I kind of just did that with two of my niblings, don't tell them. but it was like the one who's into music, for instance, I was like, you could go a little bit beyond, you know, Taylor Swift, SZA, whatever. Go a little further here. Let me stretch you. You know, I sent her a book about, you know, women in music. And I was like, there's a few rebellious, interesting things here that maybe will stretch you and give you some possibility. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
What about your own gifts that you're thinking of giving to your families? I mean, they're probably expecting books. I mean, I hope that they're excited about that. I would be. What are you looking at?
Well, Danielle, tell her about Mom.
My mom and I have been reading books together for years, you know, so we'll both pick up the same book. And now Ruthie and I and my mom read the same books. So we were reading the Sarah J. Maas series, Court of Thorns and Roses, fantasy series. It's 5 books. And I literally just gave my mom the 4th book for her birthday, which was just a month or so ago. And, you know, and I love it because I think that one is a good one to read as a family. Not as a family, because it is spicy. Mm-hmm. It does have a little spice
it's
in it.
Ridiculously,
little, you know,
spicy.
You know, cue the music. But, you know, you have the main character who is 19 years old and is kind of thrust into this position of power. And so she makes a lot of mistakes. And so you would, you know, my mom would call and be like, what is she thinking? And like screaming was
or
very
text
interactive.
Screaming.
This is like watching a show together, but it's in books.
Oh, yeah.
I love
Oh, yeah.
It.
And we're like, wait till you get to this part. And she's like, okay. And then all of a sudden I'll just get this crazy text in all caps and exclamation points. Like,
wow, I really love that. And then that, you know, we hear so much about, oh, like, everyone's beyond not doing books. It's only about, like, binge-watching TV. But you're kind of, like, binge-reading this,
oh, yeah,
this book together, the series.
Yeah, we're definitely binge-reading. We also did with my mom, N.K. Jemisin's book. We started with the 5th season. Oh, it's so, like, the N.K. Jemisin can build a world like no other. She is absolutely one of my favorites. I'm so enamored with her writing. It is a little bit denser of a book. You know, wasn't like one of those where I'm binging it all at once, because you really had to digest the story and the implications of everything. Mm. It is so powerful. And so I've read 2 of her series, but if anybody has not read her yet, I would definitely recommend the 5th season. She is...
Babe, what was the other series you read?
So the 5th season is part of the Broken Earth trilogy, and that is absolutely phenomenal. I think that's actually the first full series I read by her. I had heard some of her short stories before, and then I read that one. And the other one is the Inheritance trilogy by N.K. Jemisin, and that one is about gods that have been trapped and enslaved. And
yeah, that's the one that I read.
Yeah, I mean, it goes in so many directions. It is so unique. It is so well done. It is so beautiful. So I think both of those are amazing. I personally would do it in the order that I did it, which was to start with the Broken Earth series to really dive into what she writes. But either one of them are fantastic.
I've read one N.K. Jemisin, and I have to go back and check the title, but I like your idea of like which order the series to read in. So that sounds like a beautiful potential gift idea. So speaking of, how do folks find you, and tell us a little bit about the story of you opening the store? You're in Moreno Valley. It's a little bit outside of LA, but you're near to UC Riverside and other spots like that. Tell us about your bookstore opening story.
Yeah, so actually, I had the dream of owning a bookstore for a long time, and Ruthie was really on board with, you know, making this dream a reality. She is one of those people that if you tell her you want something, she's like, say less, we got this. And like, she dives in. She's amazing at that. But I had a full-time job, you know, I was in a career. And to make a long story short, I was diagnosed with cancer in 2022. And I was out of work for a year, recovering from that. And I am healthy now. But after a year, I returned to work, same position, and realized, like, oh my God, I hate this so much. I hated it. And I remember I literally walked into my boss's office and I said, I didn't survive cancer for this. So I'm going to have to resign. Like, and fortunately, Ruthie was not only supportive, she really wanted me to go. So I resigned and we decided to start this bookstore. And so it took us a long time to get everything together, but we found a place in the Moreno Valley Mall and we opened on September 1st of this year. And the community has been very, very supportive and it's been absolutely wonderful. It is hard, you know, starting a business. You know, the first year of business is always hard. The first year of a bookstore, I think, is really hard. Mm-hmm. But it's also been the most wonderful experience of my life, for sure.
I want to tag in on the hardness of it, especially in Moreno Valley. Because we are such a small area. I moved out of L.A. after 13 years of living there and originally from Minnesota because I needed a slower pace. And I'm still close enough to go back to L.A., but Moreno Valley is a beautiful, small, farm town feel. It's just really community. Mm-hmm. It is also conservative in that it's very religious. But what Danielle and I noticed just by observing, it is very, very gay. It just is. And there are so many kids and so many adults who have come into our store and have told us their coming out story or they're not having came out story yet. All of the tears, all of the we needed this, I'm home. Every day, honestly, just makes it like, I'm it's worth it. It is absolutely, absolutely worth it to be this magical space for these beautiful people.
That's just exactly how I've always felt bookstores and libraries to be. They're like more than about the books. It's like the energy of the books multiplies and it becomes community space. Mm-hmm. It becomes like a family space. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's been our experience, that people come in and they're like, oh, this is it. This is my new home. This is my new place. And and we hope that.
And they share us and they follow us and they root for us and they come in and they leave notes on our gratitude tree. We've had so many repeat customers. One of our customers has already bought. We have a book buying program. She's already filled up her book card at 10 books. And just, it's just so amazing. We get to play chess with the kids who come in. Some of these kids are so amazing and so literate and just, it's so beautiful to see them come in and choose books over everything. It's just such an amazing experience to get to aunt on all these kids who come in and just spend time with us.
I love that you use aunt as a verb. I'm there. This is like what we're giving our gift to the world, for sure. And do you have like events that you have in the store as well? Specific events that you have?
Yeah, we do story hours and we also do read-ins. We will be starting book clubs in the new year. We didn't want to start that right away as we get our footing, but next year we will be doing that.
But we've had some book clubs meet in our space.
Yeah, but we have had existing book clubs come and use our store. So yeah.
The story hours are unicorn story hours.
Oh my God, okay.
It has singing and dancing.
I'm guessing that's you, Ruthie. Is this like Santa Claus? We're not allowed to say.
Well, the unicorn is glitter. I just know her perfume.
Okay. I understand. My lips are sealed.
There was even a unicorn dinosaur battle.
What?
I'll post that at some point.
This is definitely my kind of bookstore. So I want folks to know, what is your social media handle? How can they connect to you? And also, you're on bookshop.org, right?
We are on bookshop.org as Getlit Books and Things in Moreno Valley. They can find us on our website, which is just getlitbooksandthings.com. Mm-hmm. And we are Getlit Books and Things, all spelled out, on Instagram as well, Facebook, and Threads. So it's the same handle everywhere. And on there, you can get to our bookshop page so that you can purchase books online. There's also the link to subscribe on Libro FM. We encourage people to make the switch to Libro if they are using another audiobook service, mm-hmm. so that they can continue to support indie stores. And then there's also a link to our GoFundMe, because starting a bookstore is very expensive and difficult. And so if people want to support that way, they can find all those links on our website.
And all of those, any bookstore that is affiliated with bookshop.org and those Libro FM, twice a year, we all benefit from all of the collectives. So
right. It's like, if I'm not able to get to my local indie bookstore and I want to order something right away, I go through bookshop.org. And so folks just switch their beneficiary if they want to support a black woman, queer, friendly, all the glitter unicorn things. And they're not even in your area, but they want to make sure that a portion of their book buying goes to you. They can go to bookshop.org and then put Getlit Books and Things.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, it's been wonderful to talk to you both, Danielle Myers-Porter and Ruthie Myers-Porter. I'm going to make that list of books from what we've been talking about, and we'll make sure to put your links and everything on our website and also on our socials. And happy book selling.
Thank you.
This has been so wonderful. Thank you so much for having us.
I really loved having you both. We could have kept talking, but you know, we have a time limit here. So yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we'll come back and we'll do summer reading next year. How about that?
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Oh, yay. I love it.
Okay. Thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, it was our pleasure.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. You can support KPFK and our show today, Feminist Magazine. Just go to the kpfk.org website and click the donate button. It's easy. If you do that right now, your conscience is clear. You have done it for this fund drive, and then you can go back to listening to the rest of the show. And that is just one example of the kind of story we love to highlight. Feminist Magazine brings you voices like that, and also feminist artists and creatives, plus, of course, local activists telling you ways that you can take action, you know, grassroots action, and make a difference yourself. That is what we actually mean when we say at the top of our show every week that we're bringing you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. And you can support us to keep us doing that right now. You can just go to the kpfk.org website and click the donate button. You can give $10, $25, $50, $100, or become a sustaining member. We want to be a sustainable radio station. And so if you just give us your credit card, we do a monthly payment. You choose how much. And then it's a sustainable way to keep bringing you these stories. Site is kpfk.org, and there's a donate button. You are listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK 90.7 FM and kpfk.org.
You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
We bring you The Healing Project, a multimedia installation that features personal stories from those who are incarcerated and highlights the deep trauma that imprisonment has had on their lives and their loved ones. When you walk into The Healing Project at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco, you see a piano centered in the middle of a huge space, connected to three smaller rooms. There's sound coming from every direction. People's voices talking about their life experiences with prisons. There's an altar against one wall, draped with prayer beads, white candles, dried flowers, and bottles of alcohol. Above it is a mural of a person crowned with flowers. Their face is in a silhouette, but somehow feels like you can look into their eyes.
Welcome to the Healing Project. This is basically just the title wall. Obviously, for like any type of exhibition, you have the title wall, which is like an introduction context for people to understand what they're going to experience. And so we wanted to try to write it like from a personal perspective. So all this language here is just basically from my artist statement of like trying to explain why I tried to create the project and what's inside of it. Obviously, the heart of the project is in the interviews, some of which you'll hear, that we did across the country with folks who have experienced structural violence from a series of different contexts, talking to them about what they went through, but also about the healing practices. And it's like a combination, like sound, visuality, language. We're trying to kind of basically cover all the bases. So these right here at the beginning, these are tapes that have short interviews on them from different folks that are incarcerated.
That's Amora Penderhughes, the Bay Area raised composer, pianist, singer, and activist. He has spent the past 8 years exploring structures of systemic racism, specifically how many families navigate the daily realities of state violence and the systems of detention and incarceration in the United States. He comes from a family with a long history of social and racial justice activism. His father, Howard Penderhughes, was an organizer in the anti-apartheid movement as a student at UC Berkeley. He later went on to work with violence prevention organizations and is an active member of the Brotherhood of Elders Network. His mother, Raquel Penderhughes, is also an activist. Fighting for environmental and racial justice, supporting solidarity movements in Latin America, and creating programs to support incarcerated youth and adults while also fighting to abolish the prison industrial complex. Penderhughes follows in his parents' footsteps. He wants the Healing Project to lift up the voices of those who have been locked up and silenced, to not only show the world that this flawed system should be abolished, but to also show support for people who've experienced structural violence.
Telling the truths about the violences of the current system and the true need to basically eradicate it, not to reform it, and being like super honest about how it affects people. And then on the other side, actually showing what type of other world is possible and what people actually need in their day-to-day if they're going to actually be the healthiest versions of themselves. The piece that I always talk about first or think about first is a piece that is narrated and spoken by my brother Keith Lamar, who's incarcerated in Ohio on death row. And it's called Sweet, and it's basically like a piece where he discusses his experience, not just being incarcerated, but even growing up previous to that as a very young person, because he was incarcerated very young. But basically the thesis of it is he's talking about the thing that he's the most proud of throughout his whole time of his life is that he's maintained and held on to his sweetness, because every level from his childhood and growing up in this country to, obviously being incarcerated, everything is designed to rob him of that sweetness and to kind of make him unfeeling, make him like hard and all this stuff. And he's just like, I always hold on to that sweet part of myself. And then he talks about also the people around him that help him maintain that and support that part of him. And I love that because, obviously, number one, I really believe in that so much, and that we all need to hold on to that and be able to hold on to that. But also because I think it directly contradicts the image that one wants to paint of somebody on death row.
Penderhughes walks me to a room with words on the wall that read, "They chew you up, swallow you." Audio was playing of a man named Keith Lamar describing how he holds on to his humanity despite being incarcerated.
I mean, one of the things that I'm surprised about, and my friends tell me this, people who that really know me, that's kind of still kind of surprising to me. I'm sweet, man. I mean, I love being sweet to my friends, and when I was younger, when I was growing up, that wasn't cool to be sweet. I remember the little sweet little boy I was. And by sweet, I mean I just like to make connection with people. I like that tenderness, it's the human thing. you know, to connect with people on, you know. But this situation, you know, when we talk about the criminal justice system, really what it is a digestive system, a digestive tract. You know, they chew you up with that education.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
You know, they chew you up with that education, swallow you, and, you know, you go in the stomach, the large small intestines, and then you come out as a piece of... So one of the things I've been kind of most amazed about myself that I've been able to hold on to my sweetness, you know, my sense of, you know, that's one of the things I most like about myself. But the only people that are really close to me that kind of know, you know, because you have to have the opportunity to, you know, well, I'm sweet to myself as well. I'm good to myself, you know, even after all I've been through. And, you know, that's one of the things that I want people to know, that even in, like, even if your worst fears come true, you know, nothing, you know, but death itself can rob you of who you really are. Nothing. You know, like, you know, I can be myself, you know, God gave me, understand. One of my close friends told me a long time ago, he said, you know, for money, life can be had no matter where you are. You can still laugh in prison. You can still cry in prison. You can still, you know, be who you are, where you are. Yeah. That's what I think I'm most proud about. And everything that I've accomplished, man, is that I've been able to hold on to that, you know, sense of sweetness in myself. Yeah.
Keith Lamar was sentenced to prison at the age of 19 for murder. He has spent over 30 years in prison, most of it in solitary confinement. The Healing Project forces us to acknowledge the deep problems in America's so-called system of corrections and rehabilitation. Penderhughes exposes the system's focus on forced servitude, imprisonment, and punishment, and its failure to consider the futures of those re-entering society and the impacts on their families and communities.
A prison is like, I mean, it's like an embassy. That's the only way I can think of it. It's like they don't have to follow the rules of the governing land. You know what I'm saying? They just have their own, they just have their own policies, and there's no one there to say it's not okay.
I think that, you know, so much of the laughter in prison is conditioning, right? The conditioning to see oneself as inferior. Conditioning to bring people, conditioning to try to have people be less of themselves, right? And I'm very intentional and very habitual about this for myself, is that I refuse to walk with my head down. I refuse not to look somebody in the eye. and when I see somebody do that, you know, I definitely point it out to them, it's like, not heads up.
You know, so it's kind of like, you know, there's nothing good that's going to come out of this situation except for me leaving this place. Titles like inmate, convict, ex-felon, they're demeaning titles. They're put in place to diminish self-respect and dignity, and to demean you and your character and to break your spirit. And I believe this is all connected with the billion-dollar industrial prison complex.
How do we capture? They have conferences where they get together and they think really hard about how we make a better cage. And then they sell their products to them and they implement it on us. Caging.
Thank you for using GTL.
The Healing Project is a haunting tapestry of instrumentation and stories about the cruel nature of prison. Each interviewee offers truth and vulnerability about their experiences in hopes of expressing their pain and bringing attention to the inhumane realities of prison. The Healing Project shows the deep trauma that the prison system causes for families and the long journey of healing that must take place. Walking through the exhibition, I enter a dark grayish room with images of men and women being projected off the wall, recorded voices of people talking about the challenges that come after incarceration.
This is why I need to try to get my record expunged, man, because I'm always face these barriers, you know, especially if I'm trying to get some property I'm trying to do something like that. I'm always facing, but, you know, so, you know, I still feel that pain, you know, of being disenfranchised, man, being civilly dead.
No one wants to give you a home. No one wants to give you a place to stay because they think or feel you're going to be a problem just because you've been to jail and prison. You're going to have the wrong people. You're going to have too much coming in or out there. You know, these are all the assumptions that they make up. Yeah, about people that's been in prison when really all we want to do is get a place to stay, get some stability, and get on with our lives. But it's hard to, and since I know what that mentality and mindset is, it's hard to
talk to somebody
about these resources that you have when it's basically you selling pipe dreams when all they want is a place to stay. And a place to stay here right now is hard for anybody. 6 months to a year to find permanent housing. So what are they supposed to do in between that time? Do you think that they care about doing the right things when they just trying to live to survive? Nobody wants to take those penitentiary chances out there day to day. But sometimes that's what people are forced with, and especially if you're a mother with children.
Nobody wants to take those penitentiary chances.
Now I'm in a blue-lit room. I can hear interviewees talking about the psychological warfare of prison and the trauma they experienced.
It's basically like a mixtape. So, like, I took all the interviews, cut them up, brought them to different producers, and then I basically, like, made a few different pieces with each of the producers. So there's this, like, each of the pieces are about 5 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes, and they're on loop. So it's basically like if you stay for however long you stay, you're getting that amount. But if you were to come in at a different time, you might hear something totally different, you know.
Civilized people don't live like this. This is the way animals live. This is animals. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. A prison is like, I mean, it's like an embassy. That's the only way I can think of it. It's like they don't have to follow the rules of the governing land. You know what I'm saying? They just have their own, they just have their own policies, and there's no one there to say it's not okay. So you can buck against the system, but they've got it in place. I mean, it's literally just like slavery. You can run. But if we catch your ass, this was going to happen. So they let you see the folks who kick up against, you know what I'm saying, the system, and they parade them around, handcuffed, you know, dummy box, little spit mask on, just, whew. It's psychological warfare. And this bottom line is what it is. It's psychological warfare. And it has broken many people.
Sitting in the blue room, feeling the vibration of the woofers strategically planted underneath the bench, you cannot escape the raw and painful stories of people who could be your brother, your student, your neighbor, your friend, or even you.
If a person is coming in here that's 15, they have to hear that they
have to resonate
with.
Yeah.
But then also we have strings. And we have, like, if a person comes in that's 60, it's going to be something for them too, you know? All original production music from, like, me and, like, 20 other cats, like, all around New York. And then we mixed it specifically for surround sound for the space. So there's different parts of it coming out of every speaker.
Right, right. I saw it as soon as I walked out, I said, okay, I know.
Maximum impact.
Yeah,
maximum impact.
So I try not to think about. There's a lot of ugly things in my heart. I just hope to the Lord I don't slip. You feel me? Said there's some things that I don't want to admit, so I try not to think about. There's a lot of ugly things in my heart. I just hope to the Lord.
You can support KPFK and our show today. Just go to the kpfk.org website and just click the donate button. It's that easy. And that was the kind of story we love to highlight. Not just stories of what's going wrong. We like to bring you stories of activists telling you how they're standing up to injustice, and feminist artists and creatives who are making films and writing books about ways to make change in the world, different ways to see the world. Plus, of course, local activists telling you ways that you can take action and make a difference yourself. So that's what we actually mean when we say at the top of the show every week that we're bringing you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist, but also engage. And you can support us to keep doing that right now. You just go to kpfk.org, the website, and you click the donate button. And this is Feminist Magazine on KPFK 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. And I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin. And we're proud to be on KPFK, along with a whole other host of varied voices from the community, but also varied perspectives that you're not going to hear anywhere else on the radio dial, not in any of the kind of canned and already digested versions of news that you'll get anywhere else. But right here on KPFK, we're bringing you stories from our activism, from our lives, and from folks that we're excited to share with you. You can support KPFK and our show today. Just go to the kpfk.org website and just click the donate button. It's that easy. You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin.
We bring you The Healing Project, a multimedia installation that features personal stories from those who are incarcerated and highlights the deep trauma that imprisonment has had on their lives and their loved ones. Many people who enter the carceral system bring a series of traumatic experiences with them, including a lifetime of dealing with micro and macro level racism and oppression. Incarceration only adds to the trauma, which is oftentimes generational.
I've been into every prison in California and out behind my father. Like, I kind of grew up in the prisons, like where the prison guards kind of knew me and my mom. My dad wrote me letters since I was born, and he would always open the letter with the same phrase. You know, and I never wrote back because I was a kid. So I just expected my dad to write these letters, and he always did. He always remembered my birthday. He always remembered any dates that were important. He was good with dates. So he would write and say, oh yeah, you did this today. That's the relationship I had with him. And just all in my head, I had this fantasy about what I wanted him to be to me. And he just never could. You know, I seen my dad 10 months clean before he died. And I hurried up and went and took photographs. You know, he wasn't there for me or my sister when we were born, but he got to see Eric born with me. You know, he got to see my son.
These transparent conversations have similar heartbreaking themes. Families torn apart and lost time. One part of the project is made up of over 100 powerful testimonies and an LP titled Grief, created by those who've been locked up. Pender Hughes has put these interviews together with songs. I sat with him to talk more about the messages in the music. He told me about one song in particular that best describes the project, titled Process.
I would say probably Process. You know, I would say that that song definitely builds it, because I think that that song represents this idea that, you know, the key to moving through all of this in real time is understanding that we're not going to get through it tomorrow. It's not going to get better tomorrow. That's just the reality. So in that context, we do the best we can, and we also recalibrate our expectations of what healing looks like, that it is not like a competitive triumph over one's demons or whatever one's going through. It's trying every day to make it a little bit better. And it's trying every day to extend extend grace to yourself in the way that you would to the person that you love, you know. And I think that that's a very important part for those that are going through those things. And that is, at the end of the day, what the project is made for. I want everyone to experience it, but the project is made for those that's going through the things. So there's some things that I don't want to admit, so I try not to think about it. There's a lot of ugly things in my heart. I just hope to the Lord I don't. I wonder what it's like to let it out, that part of me that I'm so afraid of. It holds on me and tosses me about. Doesn't seem to be something I get away from. Tell me, how do you name those well-kept secrets that you never say out loud? Why does the body see these demons but keep me from calling out? I guess I'll just say it's a process, one day at a time.
Penny Hughes highlights the harsh realities of the prison system, the traumatic experiences it causes for entire families, and the difficult long road to healing. He knows that the songs in the Healing Project are intense. He's pushing his audience to connect with those who are unseen and feel their undeniable pain and sorrow.
So there's a whole entire world that I've created in my mind.
The Healing Project is asking, how do we survive America? What does it mean to maintain one's humanity while dealing with the trauma of relentless systemic racism?
I don't really believe that true healing can exist in this type of capitalist society, because the whole society is built on exploitation. So it does not exist without exploitation. There's no way for it to exist. And that's another function of the prison, is that the prison is where we put all the people that would show us how much society has failed. You know, it's like, you don't want to look at how this capitalist system has created a problem with so many people being unhoused, or has created the problem with so many people losing their mortgage, or so many people, you know, not being able to have a job. But it's like, y'all did this, but you don't want to look at it. So then you're going to take everybody and put them and lock them up, you know?
Penny Hughes believes that it's possible to support alternatives to our draconian prison system, while also recognizing that people are complicated.
I definitely try to be very conscious of saying, this project is not a project about innocence. Like, a lot of the people that are a part of the project have done different things, you know, but they're also some of the kindest, most brilliant, most loving individuals I've ever met. And when you get deep into them dealing with and talking about why those things happen and where they are now, number one, they're actually evidence of what a real process of accountability can look like, because they've actually moved through these processes in a way that few of us have. And definitely not because the prison did that for them, but because they did it themselves in spite of their conditions.
In the Healing Project, Penny Hughes shines a light on the fact that true rehabilitation and healing cannot happen within systems built to enforce oppression and structural racism. He puts faces, voices, and humanity to people behind bars. He wants to see systemic change and stop the cycles of increased trauma and harm. His vision for the future is filled with hope for stronger organizing efforts to dismantle the prison industrial complex. He puts this energy into his music.
Hope, I wrote, I think that was the last song I wrote for the record, and it was something I wanted to represent of, like, I often get a, you know, I often get response from people of like, oh man, your work is like so dark, it's so like heavy and whatever, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking about. But so I kind of titled it that, like, as a kind of a cheeky thing, like, hey, well, here you go. But, you know, obviously it's not like a purely happy-go-lucky song, but to me it does represent what hope means to me, which, as I said, hope is a discipline. And I think for me it represents this era of, you know, for some people, the things that are going on is not a reality we can check in and out of. But I think for a lot of other folks, you know, a lot of white folks, a lot of rich folks, a lot of different people, you know, you can check in and out of the fight depending on when it's comfortable for you to be there and how you feel about, you know, how guilty are you today. That's going to make determine whether you would participate or not. And so I wanted to do a song that challenged that and said, like, you know, you can't just, if you really want to represent hope, you can't just say, oh, hope means I just going to hope it gets better. No, you have to participate and you have to realize that it's not going to just go away because you wish it away. It's only going to go away if we organize.
You told me the war is over while everything's for sale. It's all in a good performance. Yes, you pretend to care. Hide the weapons. It's all for the crowd. You wanna believe so badly that everything was safe. Don't nobody lose a fortune. It works for you. It's awfully loud in here. Cause Jesse still owes his rent now, and Bree is working for 500 cents, and she is still calling collect now. Can't believe in what you say when I see this. Can't believe in all the words of the preachers when your whole existence is illegal, while we wash up all the blood of the people. Wash up all the blood, and I can't hear it all.
One of the most powerful things about the Healing Project is the community of creators that have created it with me. It's almost 100 different people, between folks who are narrators who have shared their stories, visual creators, artwork, music, and this is very much of a collective project. And the best part of it, I think, is that hopefully when people step into the space, whether it's digitally, whether it's physically, they will feel that collective notion. They'll feel that thing of, this is a group of folks that have come together to try to really almost create an artistic rendition of them being around a dinner table talking to each other about these things, but from all around the country. And my hope is that when people will step into it, they will feel like they need to give themselves into that. You know, I don't want them to think, oh, I'm going to take something away. I want them to give themselves to it, you know? So that's my hope for how people will approach it. And I would say the other secondary one would just be, I think the other powerful thing about it is the practical tools that people can get away from it. If they're really listening to the pieces in the sound room, I really believe that people will be able to have physical, practical tools that they can take away for when they go through grieving process, when they're dealing with something that's really hard, when they've experienced, you know, some type of trauma and they're trying to heal from it. They'll have practical things they can do.
This project functions as an abolitionist narrative. It calls for an end to the current prison system it urges us to create new ways of addressing conflict and processes that are more humane.
I just hope to the Lord I don't slip. I just hope to the Lord I don't.
You can support KPFK and our show today. You go to the kpfk.org website. It's really easy. You just click the donate button, walk through a couple of steps, and there you are. You can choose to make a donation of $25, $50, or you might want to be a subscribing supporter, and that would be great. We would love you to do that. Big part of what we do here on Feminist Magazine is that we're a collective of diverse voices and contributors, and that means we bring a bunch of different viewpoints to our listeners, all kinds of perspectives and stories and guests every week. And we're teaching radio skills like interviewing, engineering, and editing to young college students and to grassroots feminists from different communities across the city. But most of all, we give our time and sweat to Feminist Magazine because we believe in radio as a tool for activism and solidarity building. I'm an activist in other parts of the community. All of the contributors here are involved in many different ways. And all through the lockdown and the pandemic, we just kept it going remotely for you. A lot of the folks here at KPFK who bring you shows are actively involved in the communities that they're bringing you stories about, so that you know what we're bringing you is authentic, it's real, and we're always looking for different angles to stories to bring you things that you haven't heard about in the mainstream media. KPFK, as you know, is people-powered radio. It's funded by people like you. And in these times, this is when we need you to step up and give back to the station that you're listening to and support KPFK. So show us a little love, won't you? You go to the kpfk.org website. It's really easy. You just click the donate button, walk through a couple of steps, and there you are. And we are going to be wrapping up another edition of Feminist Magazine. Thank you to all of our guests and our contributors to today. And here is your chance to support KPFK in this hour. This is your last chance to support KPFK in this feminist hour on KPFK. If you liked what you just heard on Feminist Magazine, if you liked the kind of stories we covered, please support us to keep doing that. You will be showing not just your appreciation, but you'll be putting your money where your mouth is. You'll be actually supporting more of these kind of stories. You'll be enabling us to keep these kind of voices on the air and showing us that you support these kind of stories, that you support grassroots stories, that you support stories about folks making a difference, stepping up, taking radical action. Those are the kind of stories that we bring you on Feminist Magazine every week. What we bring you is stories that are not just about quote-unquote women's issues, but intersectional feminist feminism that looks at issues from a feminist point of view. This is your last chance, like I said, to support us in this hour. You go to the kpfk.org website. You just click the donate button, walk through a couple of steps, and thank you.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Negwa Ibrahim. I just wanted to take a moment to talk with you all about the fund drive that we're in right now for KPFK. As you know, we are 100% community sponsored. We take no money from any sort of corporate entities. That gives us the opportunity to really talk about the issues that are affecting the world from a place of truth. and not from a place that's influenced by corporate greed, that's influenced by ulterior motives. Rather, we have the opportunity through being community funded, through listener support, to really be able to deliver programming that is speaking truth to power. And we want to be able to continue to do that. You can make your pledge to kpfk.org/donate, or you can call in at 818-985-5735. If you appreciate what we are about and what we're trying to do every day in collaboration with you all, please make sure to donate. Once again, you can donate at kpfk.org/donate or call in at 818-985-5735. Thanks so much for joining us. Wishing you all light, love, and peace. Stay tuned.